Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, quasi-viral, fully caffeinated, and a weekly YouTube show all about Notre Dame football and a fan base that refuses to learn how to speak gibberish or buy into it. I'm Eric Hansen in South Bend, and postseason free for the first time since 2016. He's Tyler James in LaPorte and wondering if he's still allowed to eat a Pop-Tart or are we mad at them too? Together, we are the word salad avoiding content creators at blueandgold.com. On tonight's show, no college football playoff, no bowl, and a suddenly strained relationship between the Irish and the ACC. We'll dig into that backstory, including a press conference tomorrow at noon with Athletic Director Pete Bevacqua. The transfer portal doesn't open until January 2nd, but Indy is already shopping, and so is Kenny Minchie. We've got Heisman talk, recruiting, and of course, your questions and comments. So start filling up that question portal. This is
Football Never Sleeps.
All right. We appreciate everyone joining us here on a Monday night. I know that probably not everyone's in the best of moods for the last 24 to 48 hours, but we appreciate you spending time with us on your Monday evening. Shout out K-Mac, Adam Springman, Mike DeVoy, John, TD, 4ND, Jeff, Outbound. A lot of you guys in the chat already. We appreciate you guys submitting questions. Please submit questions throughout the show as we talk through things. I imagine we'll probably be very question heavy. We want this to be a place where we sort of prioritize what you guys want us to talk about, although we certainly have some ideas. Whether you're watching us live right now or you're watching us on replay, please make sure that you're subscribed to us here on the channel and hit the like button on this video. And we are continuing to see an influx of subscribers over at blueandgold.com. If you want to join us, you can get a two-day trial for just $1. Use the link that's in our video description or head over to blueandgold.com and hit the join now button. You will enjoy what we're doing, even if maybe you don't enjoy the news that we've been covering in the last day. Let's start there, Eric. With more than a day now to process Notre Dame being left out of the college football playoff field, what is the most maddening part from your perspective?
That you were right about the and I will say that on the air because I questioned your judgment. And at the time, they had me hoodwinked. So congrats to you for reading through the BS. You were much better at reading through their ruse than I was. So
let me start there first. Like I'm not, you spend way more time analyzing what they're doing. I just don't trust them. And I feel like they've only amplified the reason to not trust them with this year's process. So I didn't think this would necessarily happen. I think even when we were talking about it, like, I don't think this has happened, but I'm not ruling it out. Right. So I don't want to pretend to be an expert in this in any way other than, hey, you guys, you make up stuff all the time. I don't know that I believe you.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my take.
Where I was coming from with it, and this isn't aimed at you. It's just, and you know how it is on the message boards. You know, there are so many people that everything in life is a conspiracy theory. You right. know, if the third string tackle gets a hangnail, oh, well, he's trying to redshirt so he can transfer, you know? And so for me, they hadn't done anything to that point that was squirrely. They were pretty straightforward in my mind, but, you know, and even with the, up until this week, Tuesday and Sunday, this past week, that's when it got really crazy, and it was worse than a conspiracy theory. I mean, to me, it wasn't incompetence. Well, there was some of that, but they were incompetent at covering up their trail, but it was, to me, corrupt. And I feel like I could say that with full confidence. I don't like to deal in innuendo. I like to deal in facts. And it's not that I'm with Pete Bevacqua. There's a lot of good teams. You could pick any of those teams. If you look at my AP ballot, and again, I'm not picking teams for a playoff, but I would have had Vanderbilt would have been in my field based on my rankings, but I'm not picking teams for a playoff. But the one thing I didn't do was jump idle teams over other idle teams this last week. And And yeah, I think that conference championship games, I mean, the whole, the Miami thing doesn't smell as bad as the Alabama does to me. That's where I really had an issue. And when you look at every other poll, it's 9 Notre Dame, 10 Miami, 11 Alabama. And the Tuesday excuse of, oh, well, gosh, they got out to a 17-0 lead on Auburn. Really? On a 5-7 team? Wow, that's amazing. And Auburn was driving for the game-winning or game-tying touchdown in the final minutes of that game before fumbling. Wow, you got to put them ahead of Notre Dame, who played their rival on the road and beat them by 100. So, okay, that's where I'll start with that.
Yeah, well, we had a super chat from Justin O'Brien about how did Alabama not drop. So we can keep talking about Alabama if you want to.
Well,
if you have anything else,
my thing here's and I had this in my behind the ballot column, and Tyler would have read this because he found something in it that was valuable to me. But I came off with the concept of the conference championships, and I heard a lot of people that I respect on ESPN and other places that say, well, you shouldn't be penalized if you lose in a conference championship. Look, if you're going to play those farcical games, which don't mean anything supposedly in this day and age, then there has to be a consequence if there's a benefit. If there's a benefit of either getting into the college football playoff field or raising your seeding, then there needs to be a consequence with you losing that game. Now, if you lose in a very competitive game, that doesn't necessarily mean a precipitous drop or even a drop, but you lose by 21 points in a game you're never in, and you have minus 3 yards rushing. So Notre Dame had more rushing yards in the SEC championship game than Alabama did. then you should drop. And for me, I dropped Alabama. I dropped Ohio State for losing theirs. I dropped BYU, not really far. And I dropped Virginia, like I used the thing, a cartoon anvil, you know, completely out of my top 25. You lose to a 5-loss Duke team, and you haven't beaten a top 25 team all year, and you lost to NC State in a non-conference game that's in your conference. You're not a top 25 team. So I put Georgia Tech in their spot.
Yeah, the Alabama thing was surprising to me. Like, it just didn't make sense. Like, I understand the Auburn Iron Bowl rivalry and that mattering. Like, to me, that applies to, okay, you don't hurt Alabama for struggling against Auburn. But that doesn't mean you reward them by leaping them over Notre Dame. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. Like, if they would have just stayed the same, I would understand that logic. But by moving them ahead of Notre Dame for seemingly no reason other than the outcomes of that past weekend, that was the and I think once that happened, everyone's like, uh-oh, what in the world is going on?
That's the first time I started worrying about the process and saying, I mean, I wasn't worried that you were right. I'll always admit that. But I was worried that these guys were going to do something squirrely. And sure enough, they did. And then when the conference championship games, when they went the way they did, I thought, well, there's no room for them to do that. But right. Boy, was I wrong about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would think, like, the way that they got drugged by Georgia in that game, yes, Alabama beat them earlier in the season, but like, this is the team they are now, and they are nowhere near the same level of team as Georgia right now. And that was obvious to anyone who spent a second watching that game. I don't know why.
Or the Auburn game or the South Carolina game before that. I mean, this is a Georgia team that beat Georgia Tech the week before 16-9.
Right. Yeah. Georgia hasn't been like invincible Georgia, and it looked invincible the way it bullied Alabama on Saturday. So we can move past Alabama specifically, but I did want to get to that for Justin's super chat. Thank you, Justin, for sending that in. We appreciate that. Do you other than Alabama and Miami, do you think anyone else has a fair argument or Andy had a fair argument about anyone else in that? Or you think it's sort of that three was what it came down to?
Well, I mean,
should have came down to.
I think you needed to have Vanderbilt and Texas in that same discussion. I think Alabama belonged in that discussion. I think those are the teams. And I think if you had had, and you know, you could throw BYU in there as well. Although, I mean, they got dusted in the, by Texas Tech twice. They weren't competitive in either one of those games. But I still think, given their whole resume, that they deserve to at least be. I mean, if you were talking about a 16-team playoff, you know, you're probably going to get the right teams in that this year. Now, next year could be completely different if they go to 16. And I know people are upset about James Madison and Tulane getting in, but you know, that's how the rule book was written. The ACC wouldn't have had a team in if Miami didn't get in. And there is a lot of, and I plan on asking Pete Bavaco about this tomorrow. If he believes if Virginia had won the ACC championship and gotten in as the 11 seed, if Miami would have been left out, there's a lot of speculation that the ACC kind of muscled Miami in there. And then the SEC, you know, wanted Alabama in there. And that's what Pete Bavaco did the car wash today, where he was on every network except for ESPN. And then he's talking to us at greater length tomorrow, us meaning the Notre Dame core media. But what he wasn't upset with, okay, if they pick somebody else and this is the process, it was, let's have these weekly shows and you're in, and this is what you need to do to stay in. And Notre Dame did all that. And then they're like, well, you know, guess what? You're dropping a couple spots and you're not in the field anymore. The process was really, really flawed and needs to be fixed before next year. Whatever that looks like, I think you have some time to think about what that needs to look like. Now, the format may be stuck at 12. They gave themselves a little extension. If they don't go to 16 next year, I think we will be getting to 16 at some point in the future. But that still doesn't mean this committee isn't influenced by its TV partner or the conference memberships. And that needs to go. You need to have a completely unbiased committee. That doesn't mean we're all going to agree. I mean, I post my AP ballot on our message board, the Lou Samoji board, every week, not the loose emoji board. And there'll be people that question certain spots. A lot of times it's teams they don't like, but it's their, you know, and a lot of times it's teams in their 20s. But we're not going to agree on everything. And I'm happy to explain as especially as we get deeper in the season, why I had somebody in a certain spot. And so we're going to disagree on teams, but the process should be something that we all agree on. And that's fair and transparent.
Yeah. I think part of my prediction, or not a prediction, or part of my willingness to not rule out that the committee would do something like this is that I just have sort of never liked the weekly ranking show. They always seem to be more about like drawing eyes and attention to this than actually trying to explain it to us. But I just feel like the process was really, I think the way it played out makes you wonder more about like, okay, why did this happen? Cause this doesn't actually make sense. I hear what you're saying, but all you're doing is just repeating what you did. You're not actually explaining why you did it. Like some of the things, like, I feel like that sometimes that passes for an explanation is just repeating yourself and telling you what you did rather than explaining why you did it. And I feel like the committee sort of found itself in that situation here at the end with why it jumped Miami over Notre Dame after all this time, or why it didn't drop Alabama. There was seemingly not good enough explanations for what happened. And you wonder like, well, if were they setting this all up in the long run? Do they know that this was going to play it? Like, were they leaving themselves this out to make things work in this way? Because they knew Notre Dame obviously wasn't going to be playing in a conference championship game.
Yeah, here was where I was empathetic somewhat with the committee, is that everybody wants this to be an objective process where you have all kinds of rules and you have to follow those rules. The problem is college football doesn't lend itself to, it lends itself to needing a lot of subjectivity. And so it opens it up for corruption a little bit more, but it's also the right way to do it. You can take two teams and put them side by side. Now, Miami and Notre Dame had some common data points. There's other teams that are side by side that haven't played the same team, any of the same teams, didn't play each other, and even their opponents haven't played each other. And it's really difficult. Notre Dame is one of the few teams that kind of connects conferences because they play so many different conferences. But it is a difficult process. Being somebody that's, you know, I've been in this business for over 40 years. I've been an AP voter for more than half of those years. And it is a difficult process sometimes in saying, okay, let's take the Miami-Notre Dame thing. Miami won head-to-head, first game of the year at Miami, three-point game, and it should matter. But also to me, what needed to matter was Miami losing to two unranked teams that didn't even make the ACC championships themselves. And Notre Dame didn't have any loss to unranked teams. They lost to two good teams, two top 10 teams that are in the playoff by a total of 4 points. So how do you measure those things against each other? I saw somebody in our business that was trying to justify Miami's unranked losses to unranked teams, saying, well, SMU was really good last year. Well, so was Penn State. Does Indiana deserve extra brownie points for eking by Penn State because they were in the playoff last year, or Oregon for beating them in overtime? It's a whole new year. You know, you can't go back to last year and say, well, this team, you know, Notre Dame beat a Boise State team that was seated in the top four last year. Should that count more? And what the committee did, you know, when they were asked on Tuesday, could a two teams that don't play, could one jump the other? And what the commissioner, Hunter Yurecek, said was, well, we're leaving that open because there's teams involved, you know, that they played that could change their resume. Okay. The only team that played of a Miami or Notre Dame opponent was Boise, and Boise won their game. They won their conference championship against UNLV. So that would theoretically strengthen Notre Dame's. So to me, that's more garbage, and it's a shame. Now, I'm not going to say Hunter Yurecek did this because he wanted to get into Notre Dame and he couldn't, and he ended up wherever he went to school, whatever. I'm not going down that rabbit hole. But I do think that it was a corrupt process and it needs to be revisited. So do we want to move on to the no bowl yet, or do we want to go to questions, or what?
I was going to first start us with some Pete Bavaco questions. It's about the press conference tomorrow. Sure. I know you mentioned that. So yeah. I think I'm trying to find the right one, 'cause there's a few. Yeah. Able Gaming said, so what is the AD going to announce tomorrow? And TD at 4ND said, what will Pete Bavaco talk about? So like I'll speak first here, but I don't think there's anything it's like a planned announcement necessarily. It's a planned press conference and it's something that they try to do on an annual basis. And obviously the timing of this is relevant with the recent decision, and I'm sure is not a coincidence. I don't know when we spoke to Pete Bavaca last. I guess we would have talked to him down at the college football playoff. Go ahead, Eric. You know more than I do.
There were several of us that got invited to a small group with him. I want to say it was July that we talked to him. Do you remember that, Tyler? Where we had where it's half on the record, half off the record. There were only five of us that went there. They got invited. Five or six of us that were invited.
But was there like a press conference at the end of the season? I know he would talk to people down at the college football playoff, but was there anything with him at the end of last year?
He talked to, I want to say that we had a press conference at some point with him, but then I grabbed him in Atlanta. That's where I ran into him. There was his handler was there, and I said, can I talk to Pete too? Because I saw him doing some one-on-ones, and he said, you can do this 3-on-1. And by the time we were done, it was a 32-on-1. But the three of us got to get all our questions in. It was really a great interview. It was, I thought, one of my strongest stories that I wrote during the playoff run last year. So I was really happy. But he's not available very often to the local media, and I think that's a shame, but that's the way it is. I think he would be open to it. I'm not sure that the people around him think him being accessible is the best thing for the Notre Dame brand to do these things more infrequently. He did talk to when Dan Patrick's show was in town earlier the season. Maybe it was for the USC game. He talked to them, but not to the rest of us.
Yeah, and he was on the Dan Patrick show today and was on Wake Up Barstool, which is on FS1 today as well. So he's making the rounds. And obviously, we'll have – I imagine most of the questions tomorrow will be about the playoff,
right,
and the ACC relationship and all those things. I mean, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of like
– Well, I've got a loaded – I figure we're probably each going to only get two questions. That's right. What it is. But for me – the most critical one was his comments about that the ACC relationship is irreparably damaged. And I want to know what the future of that relationship is like. What does that mean? I know that Dan Patrick asked it and he got a little bit of a skippy-do around it. But tomorrow, I think we really need to hone in. I feel like I need to hone in on that. There are some other things I'd like to ask too. I'm not going to give out my whole game plan. But there's a lot of things like what can the players do now? I mean, can they have some practices or have some workouts? Can it just be weights? I mean, it used to be tied to postseason. Well, you've got 10 teams now that are boycotting the bowls, and Notre Dame is one of them. I don't know if boycott's the right word, but there's 10 FBS teams opting out of bowl chances this year. So that's a lot. The Big 12 is fine, a couple of their members, and I would imagine Baylor will be in that boat too, but $500,000 for not going to their bowl game.
And Jeff asked, will the presser be televised? I'm not aware of that.
I think it's going to be on UND.com invite said.
I would think it will be on YouTube. I don't see it's anything set up, so we don't have like a link that we can share right now.
Right.
In terms of that, but I would imagine it'll be on YouTube, as most press.
It's going to be at the Joy Center in that little auditorium where they used to introduce football coaches way back in the day. The last one being Charlie Weiss.
Where to go next? I wanted to throw this one in here. Adam Springman says, can't Notre Dame sue the ACC for collusion or antitrust or whatever?
What would the upshot of that be? The games would have already been played. I think what you have to do is get this fixed before we get to the next playoff. So I guess you can sue anybody for anything in this country, but if you want to affect change, I think you want to, get around the meeting table and say, okay, enough of this. And Notre Dame has some leverage with the ACC. That's what to me is so fascinating about where this relationship goes with the ACC. They are locked into that technically until 2036. They signed a grant and rights deal years ago when there was a lot of shifting going on in the college football landscape. And so the ACC had all their members sign a binding agreement. And Florida State and Clemson tried to challenge that and kind of – they didn't lose in court, but they didn't win. Or I guess it was Florida State and Clemson. And so I'm sure Notre Dame was looking at that and saying, how easy would it be to get out of that? Because that's still a long way into the future. But – again, if you're going to have a divorce, you better have a backup plan. You know, this involves almost all their other sports, which have a home in the ACC, which is the whole reason why they did this in the first place. You also have a partner that's willing to schedule games home and away in lousy weather with Southern schools in November. And so is it time to go shopping for, see if somebody will give you a better deal? I think Notre Dame owes it to itself to look at that and also look at the legal ramifications because if the partnership, and again, we were going to drill down on this in the press conference tomorrow, if the partnership is as strained as Pete Bavakwa says it is, then this is real. Then Notre Dame needs to get real with an alternative.
I saw this, and I do have the quote here, so I wanted to make sure that we did get it accurate. Outbound said, Pete never said irreparable. And I believe that is accurate. Dan Patrick or Pete Bivaco first said, I would just say it's strained. And then after a long pause, Patrick asked if that strain was irreparable. And then Bivaco said, you never say irreparable, but it's opened our eyes and it caught our attention. We'll move past this like we are. As you know, we're already focused on next season.
Okay, my bad.
I think the big phrase that he said was they have certainly done permanent damage to the
permanent region. Damage. Okay,
so just permanent wanted to damage. Clear up yep. the language.
Okay, I will
for accuracy.
Well, sake. Words matter, and I should have said permanent instead of irreparable. I stumbled over myself. So thank you for pointing that out. Outbound.
All right.
I was on a soapbox. I was about to eat another turkey leg. There's one in the freezer.
Let's see. I think let's talk about the decision since we're talking about Pete Bivaco, and I think this will be something that will be discussed tomorrow too. Will be Notre Dame's decision to not play in bowl season. Eric, what were your thoughts on the decision and how it has been handled?
Well, my initial thought was that this is going to look like Notre Dame took their ball and went home. And I also thought it was inconsistent with Marcus Freeman, the way that he kind of measuredly does things and choosing hard and things like that and overcoming adversity. And I thought, well, weigh the positives and the minuses before you come to that conclusion. And then I made some calls and I talked with a great source who was actually at the meeting when they decided not to, and it changed my mind. And so when I wrote my column, I presented what this looked like to me initially, which some of our readers only read that much of it. And then I talked about that this was a player's decision, that the players felt like this wouldn't represent what this 2025 team was about, the team that would be playing in Orlando in the Pop-Tarts Bowl versus BYU would not be the team that had fought back from an 0-2 start and won 10 straight games by like an average of 30 points. And so they felt like they wanted to preserve the legacy of that team, and they opted not. The fact that the players made that the decision was supported by their coach and the administration changed my mind about it, that it wasn't hurt feelings, it was taking a stand, and it was actually choosing hard, that it was harder to turn the bowl down than it would have been just to go get your swag, have fun, let your young guys play. And in doing so, they're not helping ESPN. I think there's not a whole lot of bowls that aren't hooked into ESPN or that family. I think the Sun Bowl is a CBS bowl, maybe still, but I think Notre Dame made the right decision.
Yeah.
But there's people calling them babies and soft and right. chicken and all that today, and
or
bull officials. We all get criticized. Bull I'm sure there's are, probably critiques in the comments that I haven't seen of me.
Bull officials are distraught that this is going to ruin the college bull system. Those are the last people that I have any interest in hearing from around bull season. I don't have a problem with the decision because it impacts Notre Dame more than anyone else, and if players spoke that way and felt that way, I think that makes sense. I would wonder, the tough part about it is like player leadership tends to not be the guys that would probably get a chance to play in this, right? Like I think so many younger players would get a chance to play in this that maybe didn't play this season. So that would have been a great opportunity for him. So I'm sure that would be a bit of a bummer, but I think the downside of that is pretty large, that I think if you let younger players play and Notre Dame struggles in the bowl game, then Notre Dame gets clowned for, and people say, see, Notre Dame didn't belong in the playoff. It's like, well, this isn't the Notre Dame. Like that happened to Florida State.
Which happened. Yeah. To Florida State. Yeah.
And Florida State, obviously they didn't have the same team either. Like that part of the reason that they weren't in the playoffs because of their quarterback. But they had more guys sit out too. And I think Georgia had a bunch of guys sitting out too, but that didn't necessarily matter in that game. But I understand where Notre Dame's coming from. I don't think like the people calling Notre Dame quitters, I think whatever. They're not this isn't something they were obligated to do, right? They're not contractually obligated to play in a bowl game. And bowl season has already been diminished enough.
Right. But I mean, people just reduce thoughts to 280 characters and slap it on Twitter.
Right. And it's easy to make fun of people too. And so then it turned into an opportunity for people to make fun of Notre Dame, even though they probably wouldn't have watched the Pop-Tarts Bowl anyways.
We have our biggest ever live audience. I'll just say that. So thank you everybody for showing up.
All right. We love that. Yeah. I think we've doubled since the last time I looked at it. So
we have been aspiring to be viral, and thank God you guys are making our dreams come true.
What are your thoughts on how Notre Dame can take advantage of this time while not preparing for the bowl? I know you mentioned like you want some clarity on what Notre Dame is actually allowed to do. What do you think Notre Dame can do to take advantage of this extra time without preparing for a bowl?
Let's say they are not allowed to have practices with a bowl. I still think there's drills they can work on, their strength and conditioning, recovery for guys like Billy Shrouth and Charles Jagaza and Gabe Rubio. I mean, Gabe Rubio is not going to be back next year. Maybe Billy Shrouth won't. But a lot of these guys will be coming back. And even somebody like Gabe Rubio, it'll give him a chance for his body to recover so that he can put out his best effort for the NFL Combine or the Pro Day and things of that nature. So I think, you know, you're talking about a team that missed Christmas with their families last year because of the playoff run, played the longest season in the history of Notre Dame, and then it went right into the 2025 spring football pretty much, and then the 2025 season. There really hasn't been a break. So I think for them, there are some benefits of what you can do. If they can do some practices with the younger guys, and maybe, you know, sometimes December is when it's more when you have a bowl game than it is when you're in a playoff. But let's say they were in the Pop-Tarts bowl game. Sometimes if you're going to make a position switch, that's the time that you kind of try that out. So those are some of the things. But that's one of the questions I'll have for Pete Bavakwa tomorrow if somebody else doesn't ask it. But again, usually we get two, and I want to really save mine for that ACC stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tyler?
I think you just go all in on portal evaluations, retaining your players, like finding ways like, hey, if there's guys that you thought might be leaving, see if there's extra time now to convince them to stay. Obviously, you can always spend more time investing in recruiting and keeping those relationships going. So I think there's a lot of ways that Notre Dame can still benefit from this time and impact its team next season without playing in a bowl. And so I'm interested to see like how that all plays out. Like does Notre Dame get more aggressive? Is there just more opportunities to sort of figure out who and what is available in the transfer portal and figure out ways to do that? I know there's all kinds of rules that exist and that aren't followed. And the transfer portal doesn't open until January, but there's plenty of discussions going on about who's going to enter the portal and who wants to be in the portal, who wants to potentially come to Notre Dame. So I'm curious to see if there's a way that Notre Dame can take advantage of that. And also with the retaining players aspect of it, we've seen in this NIL era teams that feel snubbed. Like, I mean, it didn't work out in terms of on the field with Penn State, but Penn State was able to bring a lot of its players back from last season that because they were motivated from the way last season ended. And they had a lot of NIL backing. Maybe there's a similar rallying around Notre Dame from the NIL standpoint that can get players to stay. All right, I wanted to do a little bit more on the ACC fallout, and I thought it would be a good idea to share the statement that Jim Phillips had, the commissioner of the ACC, I think. Is that the right title
for yes, that? And he used to be at Notre Dame at yeah. one point.
And so his statement was, the University of Notre Dame is an incredibly valued member of the ACC, and there is tremendous respect and appreciation for the entire institution. With that said, when it comes to football, we have a responsibility to support and advocate for all 17 of our football-playing member institutions, and I stand behind our conference efforts to do just that leading up to the College Football Playoff Committee selections on Sunday. At no time was it suggested by the ACC that Notre Dame was not a worthy candidate for inclusion in the field. We are thrilled for the University of Miami while also understanding and appreciating the significant disappointment of the Notre Dame players, coaches, and program. And that came out in light, I think, most specifically to the comments Pete Bavakwa made about being not happy with how the ACC was portraying sort of this head-to-head battle between Miami and Notre Dame. And it was obviously all pro Miami, and no one from the ACC, especially anyone who ran their Twitter account, was promoting Notre Dame's resume, at least that I saw.
Right. And the ACC network ran the Notre Dame Miami game on an endless loop. My 11-year-old grandson Reed actually watched the game. He goes, "Dad, Miami and Notre Dame are on TV." And my son said, "Reed, that was played in August." And then I was explaining to Reed why that they were getting trolled. And so he understood. 11-year-old got it.
All right. I think before we dive into questions, I think it's probably worth mentioning some news that happened right before. Well, a couple of pieces of news, I guess. First, what I think is bigger news is that Jeremiah Love was named as one of four finalists for the Heisman Trophy. He was named a finalist alongside Indiana quarterback Fernando Mendoza, Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia, and Ohio State quarterback Julian Sain. We are Heisman Trophy voters, and we are vowed to secrecy in terms of our vote until after the results are played out. So there's not a lot that we can necessarily say in terms of who we think is going to win, because that would probably give away who we voted for. Did anything surprise you in terms of who was made as a finalist, or did you think there was someone else that would be included?
No, I thought those were the four that would have enough votes to get a trip to New York. And so for Jeremiah Love, as you point out in your story, it's the first finalist Notre Dame's had since 2012, when Manti Te'o finished second to Johnny Manziel. That group only had three. Colin Klein from Kansas State was the third person that was there this year. I think I can dig into a little bit of, I think, what the storyline is for each of those four without giving away my vote.
Okay.
For me, Fernando Mendoza has an amazing story. He's a guy that came through the transfer portal, helped Indiana win the Big Ten for the first time since 1967, which I was alive for, but not following college football then. That was the year before I started following college football. And, you know, he had a very big game on a big stage against the best defense in the country. Jeremiah Love, I've been voting for Heisman Trophy winners since 1984. I have never seen a player do some of the things I've seen Jeremiah Love do the last 2 years. And I realize it's just based on this year, but I'm saying, you know, Tyler sits next to me in almost every game, at least all the home games. And I don't swear very much by nature. I went, "What the F?" In amazement a few times. And he has a great story too, because here's a guy that could have had bigger numbers. He shared the ball with Jadarian Price, who I can say I voted second team All-American on the AP All-America team as a all-purpose offensive player, leading the country in kickoff returns and the yardage that he had as a running back. But that was largely, each of them thrived because of the other's unselfishness. You have Diego Pavia, who came from New Mexico State to Vanderbilt a couple of years ago and really elevated that program. And then you have Julian Sain, who was consistently the best quarterback from a statistical standpoint, from a passing efficiency standpoint, the whole season. That was he and Mendoza at the top. And if you say, where does CJ Carr fit in there? He's five. So he wasn't that far off from those two. But Julian Sain, from the Texas game on, was either one or two the whole year and remarkably consistent. And without a really great running game to go with him, but unbelievably great receivers to throw to. So those, I think, were the four storylines.
Yeah, and as you were talking about them, it dawned on me that Love is the only one that didn't transfer, because Julian Sain started at Alabama. Yeah. He didn't actually play a football season there. He was an early enrollee and then left to come to go to Ohio State. So yeah, I think they all have pretty good stories and certainly had great seasons. And we'll see who ends up winning the trophy on Saturday.
Yeah. And it's every year, it's a little bit different. Tyler, you've been voting for how long? Probably 8 years or so.
Yeah, you told me you were going to look it up at some point.
I don't
remember it. That is not important. I don't need that information.
I will look it up at some point.
That much, but I don't know exactly when I first started voting. But yeah, it seemed like there was a pretty clear cut list of guys that we were all choosing from. The other piece of news from today was that Kenny Minchie plans to enter the transfer portal. On3's Pete Nakos reported that to help us out here at Blue and Gold. So there was a couple of questions from that. Let's see, where is that? Sorry. Mike DeVoy said, with Minchie leaving, where do we go for a backup quarterback, or do we rely on Blake Hebert, Noah Grubbs, Teddy Girard?
Well, I think that's the conversation that they have to have, because you're not going to get somebody that is starting somewhere else that will want to come in, unless it's somebody at an FCS or a Division II school, and somebody that's not as good as Trinidad Chambliss, who went to Ole Miss from Division II Ferris State. But, you know, I think that's maybe one reason that Teddy Girard reclassifying makes a little bit more sense. You would have a true freshman backup or a redshirt freshman backup who hasn't played at all. He didn't play a single snap this year, but CJ Carr had only played 4 snaps before becoming the starter this year. I would, if I were Notre Dame, I would look around at the lower levels and see if there's somebody that's a fit, because you do have flexibility in your roster that you didn't have in past years. You can go up to 105 scholarships if you want. Notre Dame would like to be at around 95.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to be okay if they have all those guys, particularly if Girard is in there. I think it just brings another guy to push that group. I think you're going to deal with a lot of inexperienced backup quarterbacks when you have very talented starting quarterbacks. So I think that's a trade you're willing to make if you have CJ Carr leading your program as the quarterback. And Notre Dame spent a lot of time recruiting Noah Grubbs, certainly less time with Blake Hebert because he was a target and then not a target. And then they circled back to him once Deuce Knight left the class. Obviously, they need one of those two probably to hit to help fill the gap there, unless Teddy Girard's ready to go right away. There hasn't been a decision yet, at least to my knowledge, in terms of whether or not Teddy Girard will go ahead and try to join Notre Dame's team this coming season. That's still something that's being discussed. But I think Mike Singer, our team at Apple and Gold, was the one who broke the news on that, and we'll continue to monitor how that plays out. But I think especially if they bring Girard in and they have a commitment from him to do that, then Notre Dame probably doesn't go to the transfer portal for another quarterback. Paul Kinlan says, question, would it not be karma if Love wins the Heisman, and would it not greatly lessen the pro ND fans and allies?
I don't know if it's karma if he wins it. I think it would be great for him. I mean, he's certainly deserving. And I don't know that it's going to sway what people outside the program. I think most people, they either couldn't stand Notre Dame or love Notre Dame before all this happened. There's not a lot of people that are on the fence. There are a few, but most of them have drawn their lines. But I will say this, you know, I did a backstory on Jeremiah Love's Heisman campaign. And one of the things that Katie Lonergan talked about, and Katie is assistant to Marcus Freeman, and she also handles all the strategic communications for Notre Dame football. one of the things she said is people getting to know a player and care about that player helps that player in terms of people wanting to vote for that player as AP All-American or Heisman Trophy candidate. And I think Jeremiah Love is a likable guy in the fact that he has a great story, and he is somebody that you feel represents, and I'm not saying the other guys don't, but represents himself off the field really in a very positive way. So for me, it's not a karma thing. It's just I'm happy for him that he made it to New York, because I think he's deserving for everything he brings to the table for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in terms of, like, people already have their minds made up on Notre Dame or not. It's hard to change that. Although I do think there were people that sort of begrudgingly had started to like Notre Dame because of Marcus Freeman. I think maybe, at least from what I see on social media, maybe some of those folks are turning the other direction because they don't like how things have happened with the college ball playoff and the bowl announcement and stuff like that. But I think otherwise people can be pretty fickle about that. Joe Peter says, is Minchie going to graduate? I don't think he is in line to do that. I just checked the graduation list for January and he's not listed on there, at least according to a quick search, unless I did something wrong while I was checking. And I don't believe he's already graduated. Now, I don't know if that would mean he could graduate in May and would plan to stay through the spring. I don't have the answer to that, but I don't know, Eric, if you have any more information there.
I don't know either. I mean, Steve Angeli in the same spot was able to graduate in May with that class. A lot of times they're able to do that, but we do not have that information off the top of our heads. That's something we'll have to ask about.
Jeff Stevens asked, with Minchie declaring, how soon do you think we will have a complete list of Notre Dame players that are transferring?
Well, the portal itself opens on January 2nd and closes on the 16th. In Notre Dame, spring semester begins in the middle of January. I think there's people that will take all the way into when the portal opens. I don't know that everybody's going to declare, although Notre Dame not playing in the playoff does change the timeline. The teams that get to the national championship game have a special portal window, which Notre Dame and Ohio State did last year, 5 days after the championship game. They have their own portal window, and Notre Dame's guys that were involved with the team didn't jump into the portal until after the national championship game. So this could have more people announcing, because they're going to want to shop. That gives them more time to shop, even though they are not technically in the portal. They can look around at schools, because they will want to get some schools start their spring semester or their winter quarter shortly after January 1st. So if the portal doesn't open until January 2nd, they're going to be wanting to look around and seeing what kind of deals they can get. I muddled that up and didn't give you a definitive answer, but my definitive answer to your question is, I think it'll be during the portal period, not before, that we have a complete list.
Yeah, and not anytime soon. Like, we're still probably a month out from that, I would imagine. Because at some point you can't rule it out. That guys can still, if they still have the option to, you can't really say a complete list until it completely passes. And we'll see how that all plays out. I wouldn't expect a mass exodus from Notre Dame by any means. But obviously there's going to be guys that we'll look for opportunities elsewhere that maybe aren't in line.
And one thing we should mention too is there's only one portable window this year. There's not going to be one in the spring.
All right. Wyvern says, question, will Marcus Freeman hold a press conference? Would like to see some players too.
That's not yet on the agenda. I mean, maybe they'll go down that road at some point if it feels appropriate, but when I checked on that, that was not in the works right now.
Yeah, I have not heard anything about that, and I know folks want to try to connect dots. Like we saw Outbound was asking anything from the inside regarding the Freeman to the Jets rumors. I think Giants has been the team that has been allegedly connected to Marcus Freeman. But I don't know that we have any new information to that indicates interest from Marcus Freeman's point of view. Another thing that people were connecting the dots on, trying to at least, was him being in New York last week. But that was because they were promoting the Peacock series. Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love were also there. I don't think they were being interviewed.
They were for the Giants job too. Yeah. One thing I did see, I can't remember what program it was on, but I saw the YouTube clip. Urban Meyer was talking about that. And he said he and Marcus are friends, and that they have not spoken about this specifically, but he does not anticipate Marcus taking one of these NFL jobs. And if Marcus asked him, he would advise him against doing that, and then he gave the reasons why he would be against that.
And sort of related, Mac AD says, will they announce an extension for Freeman tomorrow?
I kind of doubt it. I mean, the fact that there's not a postseason game, I think any time now you could do that. He was extended last year and got a raise last year, so I'm not sure how far into the future they want to do that and if they want to do it every year, but a raise would be, I think, something that would be in line more than an extension just because of where coaches' salaries are going. And I think people look at Marcus Freeman as a top five coach in the country.
Yeah, I don't know if they would just add like one more year on as an extension every time they give him a raise, if that were the case. Maybe that's what would happen. I don't know. And I mean, they certainly can. I think that's probably something worth asking Pete Bavakwa about too, if they have any plans or news to relates to that.
Great question.
Rajon chimed in here. I don't even know who Leroy Keyes is, but when we were talking about Heisman and when you're paying attention to the voting, he said Eric voted for Leroy Keyes in 1968.
Leroy Keyes played for Purdue. And I wouldn't have voted for Leroy Keyes in 68. I would have voted for a sophomore named Rex Kern, who played at Ohio State. He was my favorite player as a 7-year-old and 7 and 8-year-old. And sophomores didn't win the Heisman back in those days. I mean, it was rare that a junior would win. It was sacrilege to even think that a sophomore or freshman could win it. But I will tell this quick story about Rex Kern. Years later, I was doing a book project and I had a chance to interview him. And he was everything that I hoped he would be. I was like, I don't get starstruck ever. And I was a little bit starstruck doing that interview. And then this is when you had the little micro cassettes, and my son, well, I'll say one of my sons, I won't say which one, saw the micro cassette on my desk and picked it up and decided to pull all the tape out of it. So I had no interview from anymore. And I just was sick to my stomach. And I called Rex Kern and I told him what happened, and he agreed to do the interview all over again.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'll vote for him again for Heisman, if I'm allowed to say that.
I just wanted to give you the opportunity to clear up that you weren't old enough to vote for the Heisman in 1968.
No, but the first one I voted for was 84, and the guy that won it, Doug Flutie, is almost as old as me. So I was a young pup when I got my first Heisman vote, like Jack Sobel is.
JP Steffen says, how long before we hear about Miami trying to back out of the next year's game in South Bend?
I don't think they're trying to back out of that. I don't know what the incentive would be for them. The reason they're in the playoff is because they played Notre Dame this year. So I don't know why that would be something that they would be interested in doing.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you look at what Notre Dame has said or hasn't said, like, they were not coming out trashing Miami. No one was like arguing about Miami from the Notre Dame side. Miami was trashing Notre Dame in some ways. So, I mean, maybe Miami chickens out, but I don't, it wouldn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. If Miami didn't play Notre Dame this year, they'd be Virginia. Right. They'd have no top 25 wins and 2 losses to unranked teams.
And they still wouldn't have played for their ACC
championship. Yeah.
So, That didn't impact Miami's ACC standings at all. David Nettleton, sort of getting back to some of the stuff we were talking about in the beginning. Will anyone ever trust the College Football Playoff Committee again?
I think that's really difficult. I think it would be really, really difficult for me without there being a – and even then it would be hard – a refreshing of what the process is and who's on it and how it's picked and you know, and maybe an admission that this was a farce this year, that this was something that was corrupt. I mean, it's one thing. See, I don't like when you lose and then you say, well, this wasn't on the up and up. If it was, but this was clearly not. And again, that's what Pete Bavakwa has an issue with, is that the process wasn't on the up and up. Picking somebody else is fine. Yeah, you can be mad about it, but it was just, and even the whole thing about, well, we can't compare Notre Dame and Miami until they're next to each other. They're either the better team or they're not. The head-to-head either matters or it doesn't. If they're 10 and 12, it doesn't matter, but if they're 10 and 11, it does. That doesn't make sense to me. You're either better or you're not.
Right. Yeah, you're not just comparing the teams, you're ranking them. Like, it's not just
right. You're ranking them. You're not, yeah. It's like, well, you know, Miss Delaware and Miss New Mexico can't be compared in the question and answer part of Miss America unless they're standing next to each other.
Eric Swope,
well, that was a terrible analogy. That's my worst analogy ever.
I was just going to cruise on past it to Eric Swope's
question. Let's just go to the next question.
Eric Swope said, should we start thinking that the playoff committee is influenced by the outside rhetoric?
I don't know that they're influenced by the outside rhetoric, but I think they are influenced by their TV partner. That's where I think the problem is. And what was interesting, Awful Announcing has a really good website, and they were talking about how some of the ESPN guys have the same agent as certain coaches, and so they don't want to be critical of certain coaches, and so they kind of dance around that. And I think the partnership with ESPN needs to be walled off, that ESPN doesn't have a say in this. And maybe that if you do have a ranking show, and I don't think they should anymore, but it shouldn't be on ESPN. If they're the televising network, give the ranking show to somebody else. Let us do it on Football Never Sleeps. We'll do a better job. And including having a better announcer than somebody going, football, college football, top 25. Okay, go ahead.
And we will boot off any guest that makes 6-7 jokes too. So we won't allow that. Jeff had a couple of questions, and not necessarily related, but they're related to the committee. Is there any way to objectively insert the two major poll results into the CFP committee decision-making? And then this one was, why don't they just show the CFP committee member ballots from each week, therefore total transparency?
Well, if they showed their ballots and they were corrupt anyways, what is that going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? Go over to their house and toilet paper it if you don't like the way that they did it? And the thing is, if it's, you could argue them having a secret ballot, like if you're an SEC guy and you vote for Notre Dame over Alabama, then you're not going to catch flack from the SEC people. But if it's transparent, then you're maybe more apt to vote with your conference so that you don't catch that flack. As far as like the AP and the coaches poll, there's a lot of people that have issues with those polls. I'm part of the AP poll, and there have been criticisms of that. The one thing about it is there are 66 of us on the AP poll. So usually if there are a few people that are not taking it seriously and they get booted off pretty quick, at least there's enough people to make it so that their vote doesn't count, I guess, is the best way to put it. But the AP and the coaches poll were part of the initial BCS. Then the AP said, we don't want any part of that anymore. because we don't feel like we should be making the news. We should just be reporting the news. So they substituted the Harris poll, this other poll in there, and it worked in combined with the computers, a computer average, and then the coaches poll.
Yeah, the transparency part of it, there's just transparency only matters if there's also accountability, and what accountability is there? And that's what you were like saying, well, why would they do that? I was like, well, because they can. No one's going to stop them. That's why they would do it. Like, there's no accountability for what they're doing from week to week, or like at the end. Like, I don't know what the college football playoff management committee can do in terms of changing it, but it, like, obviously, if you were one of the conferences that felt like they did right with, they're not going to say, hey, we needed to make changes in our playoff committee. I don't know how that would happen. And I think if they ever admitted to that, then it would tarnish the sort of the whole process. So I don't know how they do it. I think it's everyone's covering their own butts about it. It's sort of like talking to transfer portal guys. Everyone's talking to guys illegally. So that's why you can't blame or accuse someone else of talking to someone illegally, because everyone's doing it.
The thing with, the AP, it is transparent. Our votes are published every week, and I also put it on our message board and stuff. I put it on a little bit early before the poll comes out. But the thing about it is, it doesn't change the way I vote. I mean, if I think Notre Dame is higher than what they are in the poll, I'll vote my conscience that way. If I think they're lower, I'll vote it, and I'll be able to defend it. You have to have thick enough skin, because you're going to get criticized every week. It's usually by fan bases that aren't used to being in the poll a lot. Like, I've never gotten somebody from, let's say, Georgia that's said, you need to have your vote revoked because you have one spot different than the poll. You know, I got that this year from certain fan bases and so forth. And it's just, I just mute them on Twitter. I don't block them, but I mute them. So that way they're still trolling me and I don't even see it.
Yeah. Kevin Garber says, any thoughts on the guaranteed playoff berth if ND is 12th? Do they never rank ND above 13 then?
Hey, that's a good workaround. That's interesting. Yeah, that doesn't stop that from happening. That's interesting. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I need to kind of digest that. That's kind of a new development. I know when they were going to a 14-team playoff, and in talking with Jack Swarbrick at the time, and this is back when the original playoff was going to go to 14, Notre Dame was going to be guaranteed at 14th. And I think some of it is just, again, not to get into that group of five stuff, because Notre Dame, it's not like there's other, you know, all the independents are grouped together. They're by themselves. If an at-large team from another conference, I don't think they'd be happy either, but this would protect Notre Dame from conference champions that are ranked below them.
All right, I'll hit on some recruiting things real quick. We're over an hour, so we're going to get out of here shortly. We talked a little bit about Teddy Girard potentially joining Notre Dame next year. I think it makes some sense. I think he's better positioned to do it than most, because he started three seasons as in high school already. Like, he is an experienced high school guy, so does he necessarily get that much more out of playing at high school one more year? I mean, I think guys should stay in high school generally just to do that, because it's something you don't ever get back. But if he feels convicted in doing that, then he should go ahead and make the leap to Notre Dame if he wants to. I remember talking about this sort of a similar topic when Tyler Buchner skipped his spring senior season due to COVID to enroll at Notre Dame. And I thought then that Buchner needed to stay because he had less experience because of his injury history in high school. But I think Girard's a little bit different because he has started three seasons already through his junior year. And then lastly, four-star cornerback Ace Alston in the 2027 class announces his decision tomorrow. Notre Dame is in his top 10 alongside Oregon, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, Ohio State, Tennessee, LSU, Penn State, and USC. Rivals ranks him as the number 12 cornerback and number 163 overall in the class. And we'll see if he picks Notre Dame. If he does, he would be the first cornerback commit in the class after Notre Dame signed Kari Adams, Aiden Pouncey, and Chaz Smith in the 2026 class, which is arguably the best group of cornerbacks committed anywhere in the country, or signed anywhere, I should say, since they're now signed. So we will we'll monitor that situation. If he does pick Notre Dame, we'll have coverage of that over at blueandgold.com. We appreciate everyone joining us tonight. Like Eric mentioned, our biggest live viewing audience to date. And we'll keep Football Never Sleeps going through the offseason. That's why it's called that. We don't ever stop with Football Never Sleeps, whether there's bowl games or not, whether there's practices or not. We'll keep doing Football Never Sleeps. So we appreciate you joining us. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, like the video. We'll be back next Monday. We'll probably have a podcast later this week, the Third and Gold podcast. So keep an eye out for that. There'll be more content over on the Blue and Gold channel. I think Eric's going live again tomorrow night. Eric's a busy man on the YouTube streets. So everyone have a good week, and try to be nice to someone, even though you maybe don't feel like being nice with how things have played out in the last 48 hours.